Well, thank you both, well, all of you, so much for a wonderful presentation. And I hope it shed some light onto some often darker corners of what's going on out there for us. So we have about 15 minutes for questions. And there are two microphones, I believe, on each side. So if you have a question, please raise your hand and they'll come find you. Or not.
Hello, Timothy Wright from Edinburgh University Press. I'm just interested to know, going back to the vendors, it's really a question for probably the librarians, that how in the future they feel they can manage the number of vendors that are going to come on stream. There are quite a few, obviously, vendors existing at the moment, like Mark and Anna on the panel. Coming up is going to be the new Oxford Scholarship Online. You've got Cambridge Books Online coming. You've got books at JSTOR. All these platforms are going to have collections. A lot of these collections are going to have similar books in them, but they're going to have different books as well. So you're going to have a degree of duplication on some of these collections. So how are you going to manage that in terms of acquisition? Because you know you could be paying twice for a lot of similar books.
Sorry, you were talking about these as actually being bought ebook collections, because I mean we're doing very little of that now, because we have reached a sort of critical path where most of the larger ebook collections that we want to buy we've got, so we're more interested really more at an individual level now, and then having a discovery layer like Primo across the catalogue should actually improve the acquisition. But I mean we do look quite carefully where the same content, I mean, it's a similar thing actually with journals, particularly the aggregator collections, and we make discerning choices based on cost, on the interface, how usable it is. So I don't actually think it's any different with ebooks than it has been for some of the journals.
I do think right now it's like the Wild West. We don't know how that's, at least in my mind, is going to play out. Because, you know, okay, we have the aggregators, there's eBrary, everyone's bought from eBrary. We buy from My Eye Library. And then you hear the next day, okay, all the university presses, the big ones, are going to have their own. Well, what are you going to do then? Because some of that's in the things you're already getting. And there's... I do think that is a problem because there's just going to... I'm a person who, in acquisitions, and I come from serials world, where the number of transactions, if you have so much going on with different ones, that's just tragic. But I don't know. I think it is, everything is still in flux with ebooks. And I mean, like Project Muse, okay, they're putting out their own ebooks, and then there's something every day. So I don't have an answer. I think people are just going to have to pick and choose and hope they get the right things until somebody comes up with a new system. But I think it's a problem too.
But then the best ones will survive, won't
yeah.
they? If it is the Wild West, I think it'll settle down. Yeah. Some will survive and prosper, and they will become the platform of choice. But I mean, we do look carefully. I don't think we're... Yeah. Money's too scarce to go casually into duplication, so we will look at it.
I'm Rob Cornford from Oxfam. We produce... grey literature, lots, and it's all online, it all has ISBNs, but it's non-traditional, and there's an awful lot of it being produced from think tanks, from research places. How do both librarians and aggregators, how do you plan to cope with that? Because a lot of that is not available in print at all. So it's digital only, but it's not delivered through the traditional digital delivery platforms. It's not done through journal suppliers. It's, you have to go and find it, you scoop it up from somewhere, but some of it's of value.
Grey literature is one of the big problems and has been even before and particularly in technical information too, that is a big problem. But I'd say a lot of ours, as I say, is faculty driven. If we have people who obviously are wanting that information, we will get it. I think it has to do with programs you have, and you choose the ones. You can't choose it all, but I think a lot of in business, there's a lot of that that's very important. But I don't, there's new groups about gray literature. I mean, as far as discussing how to deal with it, I think some of it's just very difficult to get, period. But your materials, I'd say if someone knows they exist, what they are, and they relate to various subject areas, librarians know this, then they could, they know what their faculty are wanting.
As well, I think library discovery systems are getting better, the sort of overlay we're putting up, because we all know, you talk to senior academic colleagues about their searching, and they all use Google. Yeah. And I think for years, libraries, we built these esoteric catalogues that were extraordinarily difficult to use, and we finally wised up about this. So I think if we get the discovery methods right and make it easy for them to discover the grey literature and all the special stuff, it is possible to do it. And as Arlene says, we're also, we are led by the academics. A lot of the grey literature is the stuff that the academics will cite. So I think we can manage that.
Hi, I'm Bernie Folan from SAGE. Thanks very much, everyone. That was really useful for me. I'm a journals person, so I'm learning. I've got a couple of questions. One for Arlene about, you talked with some skepticism about the loss of shelving to create the coffee shops and the electronic classrooms. And I know that's happening in other places, but I'm just wondering about the value. Are you aware of any research or studies on the value of that collaborative working and getting that desire to get people into the library? And it feels the right thing to do, but I wonder how we measure the success of that at the cost of losing books. Well, and the other question I had quickly for Jill was another one about studies on concurrent use. And as a journals person, I don't know anything really about the reporting on ebooks, but that your point was really well made about the $10 for print versus $120 for e, but how much do we know about concurrent use and how much of that's going on so we can back up that value? So that were my two questions.
To answer the question about using space and those being so, that's, I've said in my talk, there are trends and there are fads. And I've been in libraries a long time, and there are some things that just pop up suddenly, and everyone has to do the same thing. And that's what's happened with this. Now, there have been successes, or people wouldn't want to do it. And it is to draw people in the library and to use it as a place to do projects. And that I do have a little bit of skepticism, because there are other people, and to be honest, some are our faculty, when they saw our new mission statement, they wrote some scathing things about this, okay, if we want to have dances or whatever. But I am skeptical sometimes of how long something like this. People do still have that basic drive. The faculty, the parents come, they get through, and they want to see the library. And they want to know what they're getting for their money that they're paying in. Where I work, it's over $30,000 a year just for tuition. So they want to make sure the money, and I think they're thinking of books and things, so that's part of my, but they want something, the wow factor. That's what some of this is about, the wow factor.
I'll briefly comment on that one as well when I've answered my question. Certainly we think the concurrent use is being covered, because the titles that we've bought, the EBL, allow 325 loans before you actually have to buy another copy. And I think we've about six titles where they clearly have been so well used that we've had to do that. But when we followed it up, they're all in disciplines where we know we've 300 to 400 students in the cohort. And what pleases us about that, there isn't a hope in hell of ever being able to meet that demand with print. And that's really, I mean, we see it as a mixed economy of E plus print for the foreseeable future. But we feel that intensive burst of demand where you've got a lot of students all wanting to read one chapter for a seminar, we see the real benefit of having the E together with the print is that that's the way we can manage that demand. Couldn't do it otherwise. Just briefly on the subject of coffee shops, I mean, we're radically overhauling our library. We're moving to 24/7 opening. We've done it for exams, going to do it for term time. With that level of opening, you've got to have decent coffee facilities. Yes. We want it with, but not just the coffee shop, we want the cafe, the proper place to eat. It's going to have internet facilities. We put Skype stations in for the international students. It's becoming a much more dynamic workspace, and also designing in research pods so that the academics can get out of the lab and come and meet and browse. And funnily enough, you know what they want back? They want the print browsable copies of things like Nature and Science that we've got all in a digital thing. They say, yeah, but I want the current volume. I want to browse it over coffee. So we've listened and said, well, actually, guys, maybe we can do that. But we're not going to keep them, and we certainly aren't going to bind them. But that, you know, the library as a sense of place where people come together with information is actually quite a strong one. And I think the library in 3 years' time is going to look very different to the way it does now, but we'll still have the wow factor, we'll still have the special collections, we'll have lots of other things. But Arlene's right, it's a balancing act.
Hi, it's Andrea Powell from Cabby. I was struck, Mark, by your comment about the key to, about discoverability being the key to usage of material. And then also pick up the comment from the gentleman from Oxfam about this discoverability of some of the less mainstream literature. And of course, you know, from a as a secondary publisher, an A&I publisher, that's something that we absolutely do cover. We are in agriculture, we cover all the extension materials. And I was interested to know, particularly from our two librarian panelists, how you see those traditional discovery tools sitting alongside some of the new tools that come along. Because I think we obviously feel we have an important role to continue to play, but there are some new competitors out there, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts.
Well, certainly with databases, I have to say that apart from a few absolute winners, the use of databases has declined rapidly over the last 5 years. I think some of it is user-driven because it's the number of clicks before they get to full text. They want to get there fast. And we've radically reduced the number of databases that we provide access to. And I can see that trend continuing. I think we will have to take a careful, measured view in very specialist disciplines, because if it's difficult to find that information in other ways, then we're going to try and keep the databases. But when you see declining use by 50, 60%, and the money is tight, it makes it very difficult to justify retaining them. So I think there will be some quite major changes in amongst the A&I services that we offer.
Who else? Any? I see it differently as far as the databases. Our librarians are the ones who use this with the, and a lot of our graduate students, you're right, they'll go, undergraduates will go to Google and they'll Google things. Although I've done some teaching myself just a couple years ago, and if you've got good instructors, they don't let you do that. And I've worked with some who, I have a very good thing, I say, well, you know, you're paying a lot of money to go here. Somebody's paying a lot of money. And things that are free, well, they're free, but we're paying lots of money for really good sources, and they expect you to use those sources. And if you do papers and you don't cite reputable sources, and then what we see about Google, too, for particularly incoming students, you should not use anything that you're going to cite unless you run it by a faculty member or a librarian. And that's just good sense. And anyone who's older and who's been in that, so we try to do, I'm not saying we're successful all the time, but we do have a lot of databases that are heavily used, and they are in niche areas too. But that's our experience. Art Store. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Art Store. My art historians who are all book people gosh, that's the number one thing. That's where you get all the pictures of everything from all museums. And it's just fantastic for teaching. So that's their database. And they love it, and they teach their students to use it.
Hi, Sarah Durrant from ALPSP. Just picking up on something you were saying, Jill, and possibly Arlene to comment as well. You said the overhead cost of interlibrary loan went down by £10,000 in a particular period you were looking at. Could you say more about that? Do you think that's a trend as a consequence of e-books? And possibly could Anna and Mark say whether they see that as a marketing benefit for their services?
Well, interlibrary loans hitherto, before we put the EBL service in, was sort of tickling along. So to have such a dramatic decline at the same time as we put that service in, I mean, we can't but feel there must be some connection, particularly because what has declined has been the monograph use, because when we first brought in the big e-journal collections, that's when we saw the big drop in the serials request, which again is understandable because we'd exposed so much more content. So we have to think it must be linked. But what I've triggered for this year is we're going to do a retro analysis much more closely of interlibrary loan demand, because I need to get a couple of years of comparative data to see which schools, which subjects are going down. We're also going to do more work actually in saying what it is they are requesting, because again, Rick's thoughts on this, you know, why do we charge for people for things that we haven't got and yet fill our libraries with stuff that they don't want? So we are going to do more analysis. But I think, as I said, I don't have the evidence to say that it's a direct causal link. It looks at the moment strongly coincidental. And what we plan to do over another year of running the service is actually look at it in more detail to see if we can match this up. But we can't think of anything else that's actually put them off, because we haven't put the cost off. It's only, is it £1.50? It's a heavily subsidised service. And it is, the monograph stuff is heavily used by the arts and humanities people, who seem to be really taking a shine to the EBL service. So it's looking as if it's a contributory factor, but I wouldn't say it was definitive.
Our interlibrary loan is really limited to obscure materials, because everything else we can, we're a big state with a lot of big universities, and anything that's in there, unless they say you can't borrow it or you have to use it in our rare books rooms or something, they can get it. We can get it. So we don't have to go through traditional interlibrary loan, and there's no cost involved except just the, it's a ferrying service, trucks that go around the state. And that is fantastic service, because you can just get it from your computer. And any book you see anywhere, it's more or less in our collection.
Yes, we do see interlibrary loan as a wonderful benefit of the short-term loan program. I mean, it saves libraries money, provides immediate access to the patron, and then will also provide publishers with some revenue. So sort of a win all the way around.
Yeah, I think with EBL, a lot of the issues are kind of surrounding ILL and PDA, in that PDA is a replacement for ILL in many cases, but we're seeing the expansion of the thinking around it, because, you know, the great thing with working with librarians is they come up with the incredibly creative solutions to problems that sit across consortia in most cases. And we have two projects on the go at the moment, one with Orbis Cascade, which is 36 universities in the northwest of the states, and also kind of at the other end of the scale is the Tri-Colleges, which is Swarthmore and two others in Pennsylvania, which is using the data from short-term loans in replace of ILL to drive print sales, but just kind of but allotting a portion of the ILL budget over to actually buying materials. It's a really diverse kind of question, whilst on the surface it seems very simple. But it's been used very, very creatively, and actually usually to the benefit of publishers, are usually excluded from the economies which ILL and other services serve.
Well, thank you all. Thank you for coming, and thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.